Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Perfect. Bang on my chest if you think I'm perfect.
Go ahead, bang on it.
No heart?
You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
This is Patchwork Heart Ministries Young Catholics Respond, brought to you by Breadbox Media. Now, here's your host, Bill Snyder.
Thanks, Adam, and welcome to the program, everybody. I'd like to welcome in our brand new listening audience from Light of Life Radio Network in West Virginia. Thank you for tuning in on this radio broadcast here today. Today, my guest is Carlo Broussard. He is a native of Crowley, Louisiana, and he left a promising musical career to devote himself to the full-time work of Catholic apologetics. For more than a decade, he has traveled around the country teaching apologetics, biblical studies, theology, and philosophy. Carlo has published articles on a variety of subjects in Catholic Answers magazine and is a regular guest on Catholic Answers Live. He is also an active blogger at Catholic.com. Carlo holds undergraduate and graduate degrees in theology from Catholic Distance University and the Augustine Institute, and he is currently working on his master's in philosophy with Holy Apostles College and Seminary. He has worked for several years in an apprenticeship with nationally known author and theologian Father Robert J. Spitzer at the Magis Center of Reason and Faith. He is a gifted and dynamic speaker. And so, Carlo, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for joining me today on Young Catholics Respond.
Hey, Bill, you're welcome, my friend. It's an honor for me to be on with you.
So, Carlo, you know, I know you've got this brand new book out there, Prepare the Way, and it's really designed to help people understand and kind of debunk the myths out there of the Catholic Church, and you know, really what's going on with how to help people understand and combat that reality out there. So I kind of want to talk with you today about going into battle with those people that are challenging the Catholic faith.
Right. And in particular, Bill, it's those, the book is ordered toward coaching Catholics to engage in the spiritual combat, particularly with those who have struggled with obstacles to some of the most fundamental aspects of our faith and the fundamental aspects of reality as a whole: truth, God, Jesus, Christianity, and then ultimately the church. So it rather, you know, in the past, the modern movement of apologetics sort of cataloged the various objections from Protestants. But my book is geared toward helping Catholics engage in conversation in the spiritual combat with unbelievers, maybe those unbelievers who don't embrace the objectivity of truth and they're relativists, right? Your truth,
right.
My truth kind of thing.
Yeah, you know,
or
what? Yeah,
the unbelievers, like those who don't believe in God.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's such a relevant topic to discuss and also a really great tool. I mean, you know, when you look at this book, readers, when you take a look at it, you go to Catholic.com and get it. It's formatted so nicely. You know, it's got this question and this response from you, and they're in bite-sized pieces, you know, which is kind of really nice, right?
Sure. The way we set it up was like, for example, we have a section, Prepare the Way for Truth, and the obstacles are presented as, you know, how can I believe in truth when people believe so many different things? Or to say something is true is to be intolerant, and to say somebody's wrong is to be intolerant. Or how can I believe in God when, there's no scientific evidence for God? Or how can I believe in Jesus when I can't even trust the historical reliability of the Gospels? So that's how it's set up. And each chapter, Bill, is divided up into distinct strategies that I coach the reader in on how to remove these obstacles in order to prepare that way, whether it's the presence of something like a mountain or a hill and we got to lower it, or it's the absence of something like I don't have any evidence for God and we got to fill it, and prepare that way as the Lord approaches the unbeliever with the gifts of truth and life. And each of the strategies are divided up into some questions as well, to sort of within the context of the reflection, to guide along the conversation with your friend and coaching you on how to do that, as well as to draw out ideas and expose flawed fundamental assumptions, et cetera. So that's kind of how the layout of the book. So you know, you can open up to the table of contents and say, hey, I like that topic, and read it, and within 15 minutes, you're done with the chapter, and you got, you know, these arrows in the quiver that you're ready to pull out and shoot at a particular target.
Exactly. And, it's so wonderful. I want to talk with you today just a little bit about those things you mentioned at the beginning there about relativism and what relativism is for people out there. I think, people who live in a relative, it's almost like a fish in water, right? I mean, we're living in this relativistic world. So what is it? Right. You know, how do we recognize it?
Yeah, you know, Bill, I think you hit the nail on the head there, man. You know, so many people, we live in it so much that people aren't able to take a step back to examine what it is and how to critique it. You know, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, as Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger pointed out in his book, Truth and Tolerance, that relativism is the most profound difficulty of our time. And basically, Bill, relativism is a philosophical worldview that states there is no truth independent of what you or I think, but that truth is relative to an individual or a group of individuals' set of beliefs. So what might be true for you might not be true for me. So that's fundamentally what the philosophical worldview of relativism is. Now, we have to think about that, examine that. Well, is that the case, right? So the relativist will make the claim, Bill, that there is no absolute truth. Now, here's one of the strategies that I propose to the reader in the book, to coach the reader in, and that is strategy one: show that relativism is self-refuting, right? In philosophical terminology, we'd say it's self-referentially incoherent. In other words, when the relativist asserts relativism, he's basically pulling the rug out from underneath his feet. Because here's how we can expose the incoherence of relativism, Bill. If you tell me that there is no absolute truth, I would simply respond and ask you, is that absolutely true? And if you say yes, it's absolutely true, well then, first of all, there's at least one absolute truth that you acknowledge, namely that there is no absolute truth, the belief itself. But in as much as you acknowledge that your belief, there is no absolute truth, is absolutely true, what you're basically saying is it's absolutely true that there is no absolute truth. And fundamentally, that violates the first principle of reason, the principle of non-contradiction, which states that something cannot both be and not be in the same respect at the same place and time. So, Bill, what we've done here is that we've shown the proposition there is no absolute truth to be false, and therefore its opposite, there is absolute truth, is true. So in showing the incoherence of relativism, we indeed prove that there is an absolute truth, that there is objective truth. Now, what that objective truth is, well, we're going to have to roll up our sleeves and get to work and trying to figure that out. But at least we have our starting point right, that there's truth. And that's a big starting point to have before you can even begin rational inquiry and trying to come to the knowledge of what is true about reality.
Yeah, and how about the people that say, okay, well, fine, relativism is the way to go, right? I mean, all right, so all right, I can say that, you know, there's an absolute truth out there, but I still want to believe, you know, emotionally that relativism is okay.
I know where you're going with that one. Yeah.
You know, I always like to point out, well, if I start calling the color red green and the green red, we're going to have a whole lot of car accidents, right?
Yeah, amen to that. Yeah, you know, you were on to something there, Bill, because many times, you know, somebody might take a step back and say, okay, well, intellectually, I kind of see that doesn't make sense. Carlo, I mean, isn't it the case that when you say something is true, that necessarily implies that some other opinion is wrong? And but isn't it the case that when you tell somebody they're wrong, aren't you being intolerant, right? And this is a label that's sort of slapped on to absolutists, those who acknowledge absolute truth. You know, to tell somebody they're wrong and to acknowledge that and to claim that you're right, well, you're just being intolerant. And the way we can respond to that, Bill, is we have to show, number one, it's self-defeating for a relativist. A relativist can't assert the good, the objective good of tolerance. Why? Because that's at least one of absolute truth. You know, if a relativist says you ought to be tolerant, well, that's at least one absolute truth. So apparently you're not a relativist anymore. That would be my first strategy, right? To try to show that you can't embrace relativism and the objective good of tolerance at the same time. You're going to have to give up one in order to keep the other. You can't have both in. But more fundamentally, Bill, I think, like as I point out in my book, Strategy 2, when the relativist slaps this label of intolerance on those who would make a truth claim and say that other people's opinions are wrong, they're misunderstanding tolerance, right? They're misunderstanding the very essence of tolerance. I mean, because think about this, Bill. Relativists don't tolerate other relativists' opinions. Like, you know, you don't tolerate some belief that you agree with. Relativists don't tolerate people who believe in relativism. You only tolerate those beliefs and opinions that you disagree with. But to disagree necessarily involves acknowledging that that person's belief is wrong. So notice what they're doing, Bill. They're telling us we're being intolerant for saying somebody's belief is wrong, but yet saying somebody's belief is wrong necessarily belongs to the essence of tolerance.
Exactly.
So it's fundamentally a misunderstanding of tolerance. You see, tolerance is acknowledging or asserting that a belief is wrong, but at the same time respecting the dignity of the human being. When somebody tell somebody they're wrong in a way that they're disrespecting the dignity of the human being, well, then that's it. The intolerant or the mean-spiritedness, right, is not flowing from the absolute truth claim. It's flowing from a misunderstanding of the truth about the dignity of the human being that we must always reverence. So rather than truth claims in and of themselves being mean-spirited and leading to conflict and violence, it's actually the misapprehension of the goodness and the dignity of human beings that we have to live in harmony with, right?
Yeah.
And so in no way should physical coercion be a byproduct of an absolute truth claim. In no way should violence be the product or the effect of an absolute truth claim, at least from the Christian perspective. It's the absolute truth claim about the dignity of the human being that's going to protect that human being from the unjustified violence.
Exactly, exactly. Carlo, I just love how how you're so succinct. You really have put these arguments together so well, and you know them inside and out from your heart, which is so awesome. Would you believe time flies?
Well,
and we're already going to hit the break.
Wow, amazing.
I know. So we're going to come back and talk about the existence of God, because I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that. So right back after that, right back after this on Young Catholics Respond with Carlo Broussard. I'm Bill Snyder.
The words spoken by Our Lady of Guadalupe to Juan Diego nearly 500 years ago are almost too good to be true. Asking that a temple be built at the site of her apparition, she promised that here I will give all my love, my compassion, my help, and my protection to all those who love me, cry to me, seek me, and who have confidence in me. Here I will listen to their weepings and alleviate all their sufferings, necessities, and misfortunes. My name is Alan Napleton, and I live in Dallas, Texas. I have visited her shrine in Mexico City dozens of times, bringing my own petitions, and have found Our Lady to be true to her word. Over the years, I have brought hundreds of pilgrims to this holy place without incidents, and have now founded Viva Guadalupe, a nonprofit that provides safe and inexpensive pilgrimages to Our Lady's shrine. If you would like to take our Blessed Mother up on her promise and learn more about how you can visit this special place of grace, please visit vivaguadalupe.org for more information.
The Contemplative Stations of the Cross audio devotional is now available from Patchwork Heart Ministry. This devotional features an introduction and overview of the theology, history, and spirituality of the Stations of the Cross by Father Bill Zimmer, a priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago, along with an audio version of the Contemplative Stations of the Cross led by author Bill Snyder, and the Stabat Mater, chanted in Latin by Marissa Ellison. CDs are $7.99, and digital downloads are only $3.99. Copies may be purchased by visiting patchworkheart.org or calling 424-704-3278. That's 424-704-3278.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Hi everybody, Bill Snyder here. Just want to thank you for listening to this episode of Young Catholics Respond. And as a founder of Patchwork Heart Ministry, we have so much more going on than just our podcasts. Check it out at patchworkheart.org.
Do you want to keep your finger on the pulse of Patchwork Heart Ministry? Follow our monthly blog, Written on Our Hearts. Simply go to patchworkheartministry.blogspot.com and click subscribe and follow the on-screen instructions. That's patchworkheartministry.blogspot.com, then click subscribe.
Your heart is always beating, but you never have to think about it.
Welcome back to Young Catholics Respond. Once again, Bill Snyder.
Welcome back to this episode of Young Catholics Respond. I am Bill Snyder. Today my guest is the one and only Carlo Broussard. His brand new book out is called Prepare the Way, and he is giving us some insight into what is all over that book today, talking about the ways that we engage with non-Catholics. That's really what the book's all about, engaging with non-Catholics and being prepared to for the way of engaging non-Catholics through good, succinct responses and being able to prepare yourself for battle. So, Carlo, in the first half we were talking about relativism, but I kind of want to switch gears and talk with you about atheism and proving the existence of God, because there's a lot of people out there in America who've either completely lost faith, turned away from faith and said, I'm now an atheist, or have never really been raised and understand what it means to be raised in the religious home. So what's the deal?
Yeah, well, you know, Bill, one of the major obstacles that I've found to impede folks from embracing the truth that God exists is this idea that, well, you know, how can I believe in God when there's no scientific evidence for him? I mean, science hasn't detected God, and so therefore God must not exist. The cultural myth that science is in some way an obstacle in and of itself to God, precisely because science hasn't detected God. And so we have to be equipped to remove this obstacle before we can even begin giving a philosophical argument for God's existence, right? Because the person that embraces this way of thinking is restricting their rational inquiry simply to scientific rational inquiry. The fundamental assumption being that science is the only source of objective knowledge about what is real and true. So we have to expose that flawed assumption there. And it's very simple how we can do this, Bill. We simply, and I'll point this out in the book in one of the strategies, is show how this belief that science is the only source of rational knowledge, right, and the only rational form of inquiry, we can show how it's, once again, self-refuting and incoherent. And this belief is called scientism, all right? So scientism says scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge, and the implication being that any sort of religious knowledge like God would not be real knowledge, right? So that's the statement of the belief. Scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge. We call that scientism.
Wow.
But guess what, Bill? That belief in and of itself is not scientific knowledge. The truth value of that statement of scientism cannot be arrived at by any form of scientific experiment or empirical verification. And so if it's not scientific knowledge, well, then according to its own principle, guess what? It's not real knowledge. And if it's not real knowledge, well, then why would somebody believe it, right? So scientism is actually self-refuting. So once we get that out the way and we realize, well, you know what? Science is not the only tool in the tool shed in order to inquire about what is true. There's other tools to be using, right? I mean, if you're trying to find plastic cups on the beach here in Southern California, you're not going to use a metal detector, right? Just because the metal detector can't detect the plastic cups doesn't mean the plastic cups aren't on the beach.
Right.
You got to get another tool. You're going to have to get a shovel and start digging, and you're going to dig for a long time. When you get with science, in order to detect God, you're going to have to get another tool out the tool shed. And Bill, that tool is philosophy. And in my book, in one of the chapters, in the first chapter in the section on prepare the way for God, you know, the obstacle is how can I believe in God when there's no good arguments for God? And so what I do in that chapter, and we don't have time in this segment here in the interview to walk through it step by step in a detailed way. But what I do is I present the reader and I coach the reader in how to present a philosophical demonstration of God's existence, starting from things of our experience, namely the tree outside. I recognize that the tree outside doesn't have existence by nature. It doesn't exist necessarily. How do I know that? Because there was a time when it didn't exist, and there's going to be a time when it won't exist in the future. And from that, I'm able to derive, and I coach you in through this in step-by-step way, from that observation, I'm able to deduce that that tree outside doesn't have existence by nature, like a triangle has three straight sides by nature. There can never be a time when a triangle doesn't have three straight sides. So because this tree comes into existence, goes out of existence, it doesn't have existence by nature. So guess what? As I point out in the book, it's going to need a cause. And if that cause doesn't have existence by nature, it's going to need a cause. And what you find when you do a philosophical analysis of this, metaphysically, philosophically, reason demands that you arrive at a cause that does have existence by nature, of which essence or the nature of the thing and its active existence is identical rather than distinct like in the tree. And it's that cause that right here and right now is ultimately responsible for that tree outside actually existing, for the conjoining of what it is and that it is, its essence and existence, that can only be explained by a first cause whose essence and existence is identical. Now, I know that's a mouthful. I know that's a lot. And your listeners are probably thinking to themselves, what in the world is he talking about? Get the book and I'll explain it to you. I'll actually coach you in the steps on how to arrive at that conclusion that there must exist a first cause that is existence itself. That first cause that is existence itself is God.
Yeah, and you know, it is fascinating. And In reading that part of your book, it really is incredibly fascinating how you go right on through it. And he's not lying, folks. Pick up the book and he will be able to walk you through exactly how to prove the existence of God to somebody who may just not believe. Now, there's also the emotional aspect of belief in God, sure. Right? I mean, there's an emotional, like, okay, what has God done for me lately kind of attitude out there in this world. And I've encountered that, you know, recently with students in my youth ministry programs. You know, how do you answer that? Okay, like, you know, okay, it's that agnostic question, I guess. There's this God way up there, fine, he's gonna do everything just fine. But what do we do with this personal God?
Right. Well, first of all, from a philosophical, if I were to, since I still have the philosophy hat on, Bill, I would say, well, given the conclusion of this philosophical argument that I can lead you through, when you come to that conclusion, you realize that that reality that we conclude with is that which is necessary for you to exist right here and right now, not just the tree out there, but you. So without that causing you to exist, you would lapse into nothingness, right? So already, even with the philosophy hat on, we can see that, you know, this first cause, God, is not just some, you know, deistic God who kind of gets everything started and then leaves us all alone. No, he's actually the very reason why I am existing right here and right now. And when we philosophically analyze that, we realize that such a reality is pure truth and pure goodness. And then I also can come to the conclusion, Bill, that I am made for that reality in order to be completely and perfectly happy. Now, I take the philosophy hat off, and then I put my theologian hat on. And then I say, well, you know what? And this is where we get to the section on Jesus, Bill. This is why Jesus is important, because Jesus comes and reveals to us that he is. He proves to us through his resurrection, he demonstrates, which we can know to be a historical fact, that he is the fullness of the revelation of that first efficient cause that we can philosophically arrive at, and reveals to us that cause being pure love itself. And Jesus comes and reveals to us our destiny of heaven. And Jesus comes and reveals that he's given us grace through the church that he's established in order to empower us to journey through this life, even in the midst of the trial, the tribulations, and the suffering, and the tears, and the darkness of trial and tribulation. Jesus is that light that guides us through that darkness in order to achieve an end, a goal, a destiny where all evil, all bad things, all tears will be wiped away and redeemed, and we will receive a reward that will totally outweigh any evil trial and tribulation that we've experienced in this life. So the destiny that Jesus reveals to us, namely heaven, throws open the dark door of time, Bill, and gives us purpose and meaning in our lives. And Jesus invites us into that relationship with him and his Father and the Holy Spirit, to where we will no longer say, well, what has God done for me? We actually will be able to experience his providential hand, see his providential hand as we walk through our lives. Now, of course, that's the theologian hat on, but that's a part of the book when we're preparing the way for Jesus, to show that Jesus claimed to be God. He resurrected from the dead to vindicate those claims. And so everything he reveals to us about heaven, everything he teaches us about suffering is true.
How beautiful. Carlo, this is an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for being here and talking to our listeners, because
you're welcome,
it's just Bill. It's just so much. We're running out of time, so I want to make sure that we plug the book and all the great work you're doing at Catholic Answers and your speaking engagements and stuff like that. So go ahead, give a plug for all that stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, Bill, you know, your listeners can check out the book at shop.catholic.com. That's where they can get it. Or they can just go to amazon.com and get it, the book, from there as well. They can also, if any listeners are interested in inquiring about bringing me out to speak at their event, they can check out CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. And then, you know, I have a page on there along with other speakers, and all of my talk topics and booking information and schedule is there at CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. And I would also encourage folks to check out our website, Catholic.com, where, you know, I have articles there posted and archived, and articles that I'm posting every 2 weeks. And I also do 2-minute ready reasons videos where I take an objection and give some ready reasons in response. And your listeners can also follow me and all of the content that I produce at carlobroussard.com.
Awesome. Carlo, this has just been awesome. It's been great to have you. I have to have you back on at some
Amen
point.
Amen to that, brother. I look forward to it.
Yeah. Well, this has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond, and I hear it is almost heaven out there in West Virginia. But until you get there, keep beating to your Catholic heart. I'm Bill Snyder.
This has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond. For more information about our program or to be a guest, visit patchworkheart.org, email info@patchworkheart.org, or call 424-704-3278. That's 424-704-3278.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.